Chapter 7. Fordism. The political desire of the populace to expand the money supply and decrease concentrations of wealth could easily be viewed as a power grab by persons practicing the politics of envy. But populist economics was much more. At the heart was a simple notion. Bad economic times not only idle productive workers through unemployment, but often bankrupts those brave and clever enough to start their own business enterprise. The populace argued that if this terrible waste were eliminated, it would follow that the whole society would become richer. Arguing the point and proving the point were two very different matters. But out of the economic and political chaos of the late 19th century American experiment in capitalism emerged a man whose business philosophies and products would transform the very nature of 20th century economic reality. Henry Ford. Ford did not invent the automobile, nor the assembly line process, nor most of the tools that allowed him to succeed. But Ford's business ideas would prove that he was the populist's populist. His decision to build a car for the masses would transform the face of America by changing the definition of economic success. Even though Ford merely proved the validity of the populist economic agenda, fairness dictates that his economic proof should be honored by naming it after him. Hence, Fordism. The Fordist Economic Principles. Mass production requires mass consumption. It is simply not possible to design something as complicated as an automobile if the costs of engineering and tooling cannot be widely spread. Without mass markets, great product sophistication is simply impossible. Mass production requires control of, rather than obedience to, markets. The summary judgment of the market, bankruptcy, is inappropriate for large-scale enterprise. Too much is at stake, too much money, and too many people. Markets would still have their way under Fordism, but significant efforts, including advertising, would be employed to control the behavior of markets. But what made Ford the social revolutionary was his insistence that workers must make enough money to buy back production. When Ford announced that he would pay $5 for an 8-hour workday, he was denounced by his fellow industrialists as a Bolshevik. Ford was no Bolshevik, as his later life would demonstrate. He was merely a pragmatist. If people cannot buy back production, the consumer pool dries up, eventually causing failure to the businesses that cannot be allowed to fail. In order for Fordism to work on a society-wide scale, everyone would have to agree with him. Because of the competitive nature of American business, some folks find the need to cheat. In the early days, especially in the heyday of the Model T, Ford was so successful that he could go it alone. He could simultaneously pay his workers the highest wages while selling his product for the lowest cost. Ford had institutionalized a very anti-market notion called value. Price became less a function of markets and more a function of vertical integration, ingenious production techniques, clever design, and resource efficiency. How much should a car cost? This turned out to be a question beyond the scope of any extant economic thought. By concentrating on value, Ford was able to reduce the price of his product to the point where his production workers could actually buy one. Never before in history had anything so sophisticated been available to almost anyone. It was as if a stonemason were able to buy a cathedral. Not everyone was in a similar position, and by the 1920s, Ford's scheme was under assault. After teetering through the 1920s, the American economy collapsed. John Maynard Keynes provided the economic rationale, and Franklin Roosevelt provided the political clout for Fordism's missing link. In times of economic distress, consumption must be socialized. With this missing piece in place, Fordist economics would dominate the American landscape and would produce what became, following World War II, the Great Prosperity. How can this be? An astute reader might ask, having studied a great deal of economics and never come across the notions of Fordism. In spite of its great success, the great irony is that Fordism is far from a commonly accepted form of economic thought in the United States. It is only in Japan and Europe where the term Fordism has widespread and specific meaning. Ford was not an economist, and during those times he chose to make statements about how the world worked. Outside those areas relating to his immense mechanical genius, he was widely regarded as an ignoramus. A person cannot officially become an economist without writing. Ford could barely scrawl. Ford invented Fordism by inventing a new industrial yardstick by which every other product would be measured. The automobile still fulfills that function in most industrialized countries. Products either compare favorably or unfavorably with cars in terms of value. Products which show greater sophistication for lower prices than automobiles are considered bargains. Computers and consumer electronics are bargains by Fordist standards, while medical equipment, military hardware, and site-built housing are considered very bad buys. Even more importantly, most countries with auto industries use the auto workers' contract as the scale by which wages are judged. The American economy became Fordist without anyone seeming to notice. Not surprisingly, this causes widespread confusion. Most professional economists and other economic writers maintain that we have a capitalist economy. In a sense, they are correct because Fordist economics is an economics of production, and much of the American economy is non-productive and indeed capitalist. Compounding the confusion, such writers then determined that they must define capitalism using either the 18th century notions of Adam Smith or the 19th century notions of Karl Marx. That capitalism should be defined by the 20th century notions of Henry Ford occurs to but a handful. American citizens and their politicians are equally confused. The common perception is that capitalism is a slur word hurled at us by our enemies. As a result, the American economic system is commonly called free enterprise, or more strangely, because it is a political term, democracy. While calling the combination of Fordism and capitalism these names would have pleased old Henry, it hardly makes for enlightened political or economic thinking. The time has come for a fuller discussion of the implications of the non-decision to embrace Fordist economics. While Fordism produced history's most widespread general prosperity, it is hardly a doctrine without problems. Fordism could withstand the concentrations of wealth inherent in industrial capitalism while providing for a comfortable middle class only by victimizing a third party. The third party was the environment. As sentimental as Henry Ford was about the natural environment, his economics and products have almost destroyed the biosphere. For that reason alone, Fordism should be scrapped. But scrapping Fordism may be a bit premature. Importantly, Fordism is effective. The Japanese became the richest nation on the planet using Fordist production principles. Even more poetically, the Ford Motor Company, under the leadership of a living, breathing Fordist, became, as of 1986, the most successful automobile company in America. The highest profits, the best value for customers, and the highest paid workers. By 1991, all American car companies were in trouble, but it can be argued that the leadership of Donald Peterson during the 1980s left Ford Motor in the best overall position. Fordism works. On the other hand, the management of Ford since that time have managed to turn all of this profit and positions of power into lawsuits and losing. Fordism works. Any philosophy with a successful track record should be viewed in terms of modification rather than disposal. There are few enough successful philosophic game plans as it is. The question then becomes, can Fordism be altered sufficiently so that it can coexist with the needs of the biosphere? The simple answer is that there may be no choice. The Fordist effects on the biosphere may be reversible, but the decision to go to a Fordist economics may not be. The problems caused by Fordism may only be cured by a better Fordism. Moreover, there are political problems that would be caused by abandoning Fordist principles. How does one shrink a middle class without tremendous social upheaval? Even more importantly, Fordist economics is predicated on product sophistication. The environmental problems caused by the product output of advanced technologies are extremely complex. They cannot be solved by people of mere goodwill. They must be solved by the people who design the problem. Fordist methods are effective. The Fordist productive middle class has the expertise. So, an environmental solution lies in redirecting Fordist capabilities.